Good morning. It's 9 after 6 on Tuesday, August 12th. John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week. The latest invasive threat to our forests in Wisconsin was discovered in the state last week. Emerald ash borer, which has destroyed millions of trees in Michigan and other states, has been found in two places in Wisconsin. My guest this hour is Phil Townsend, Associate Professor of Forest Ecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he joins us to try to help us track our way through this latest invader. Good morning, Professor Townsend, and welcome to the program.
Morning, John.
Okay, so we've had Dutch elm, bronze birch borer, pine blister rust, gypsy moths, tent caterpillars, oak wilt. Now it's the emerald ash borer. Have I missed any prominent tree problems in the past 100 years or so?
Well, there are more. There was the chestnut blight. There's hemlock woolly adelgid, which isn't in Wisconsin yet, but may soon be on its way. So they keep coming.
Well, they do. And now we've got emerald ash borer to deal with, found in two places in the state last week. Let's start out by maybe doing a little review. What is the emerald ash borer?
Well, the emerald ash borer is a small beetle, maybe a half to an inch in size, somewhere in there. It's got a metallic green shell, and it arrived in the U.S. sometime in the 1990s, probably in the Detroit area. It came in on untreated shipping material, probably boxes or crates or something like that, coming from East Asia, and it took a few years to get its foothold in, but then in 2002 it was identified as the prime cause of extensive mortality in ash trees in the Detroit and Windsor, Ontario area.
Now, this came from East Asia someplace?
Right. It is a native insect in Korea and northeastern China.
And I assume that over there it has some natural predator.
Yes, it does. It has a variety of natural predators that have sort of co-evolved with it that help to keep the populations down.
But those don't.
It's still a pest, though, to ash trees in Asia.
But it doesn't have any natural predators here in the United States.
No, and again, that's because ecologically the forests with the ash trees here developed without this present, and as a consequence, there was really never any need for a predator to develop. It's possible that some of the native predators on other beetles and other beetles in the same taxonomic class may in fact feed on the emerald ash borer, but it's new to them, and as a consequence, it's they're of limited effectiveness at this point, especially when the emerald ash borer can breed and reproduce and take over ash trees much faster than a predator that hasn't previously seen it can sort of adapt to it.
Mm-hmm. And what kinds of predators would normally feed on beetles of that type?
Well, there's a number of parasitoids that do feed on them. They tend to be larval or egg parasitoids. So they don't actually feed on the beetle, but they feed on the larvae. And So there are a variety. There's a variety of different types of insects that would feed on them, and also actually even woodpeckers would feed on them. But it's more of sort of a population control issue for a biological control of predators to really take effect. It would take many years, many generations for them to develop.
As I understand it, the problem for the ash trees isn't in the fully formed, the adult beetle stage. It's when it's the larvae that are the problem. Is that true?
That is correct. The fully formed adults may chew on leaves a little bit, but it is, in fact, the larvae. The females deposit their eggs in the bark, and the larvae feed on the phloem. And the phloem is the material just on the inner part of the bark inside the tree that transports nutrients from the soil, from the root zone, up to the leaves. And then at at different times of year may transport nutrients back down to the root zone prior to the trees dropping their leaves and things like that. And the they go in there and they create these, they feed on the phloem, they create these sort of S-shaped galleries within the bark that cut off the flow of phloem throughout the tree, and does what we call girdling the tree. The tree can't get the nutrients that it needs and begins to decline.
We're going to take a break to check weather around the state of Wisconsin, and when we come back, we'll invite people to call in and ask their questions about this pest, this threat to our ash forests. This is a serious thing. In other states, it's cost millions of trees and millions of dollars to property owners and to the forest industry. We need to know what to do about it. So we've got the expert to help us figure this out, and you can call in with your questions. Here are the numbers, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, toll-free. In Madison, please use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. If you'd like to use email, the address is talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 17 after 6. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine today. Here's what's coming up a little bit later on the Ideas Network. If Senator Obama won the presidency, what would it mean for black politics in the United States? After 4 today, Ben Marins and his guests discuss the generational divide in black politics today. That's coming up after 4 o'clock today here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about the emerald ash borer, which is the latest foreign invader to hit Wisconsin. And it's been found now in 2 places. It got its start in Michigan and was first discovered there in 2002. And it has killed millions of ash trees in Michigan. Now it's in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan as well. And it's in a number of other states in the United States. And this is a serious problem. And now it's just getting started in Wisconsin, and so we're talking about what this is, what can be done about it, and what the significance is for Wisconsin. My guest this morning to help us sort through these issues is Phil Townsend, Associate Professor of Forest Ecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. If you'd like to join us by phone to talk about this issue or ask a question of Professor Townsend, you can call us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or if you're in Madison, call 263-1890. And again, the email address is talk@wpr.org. Well, Professor, what is the significance of the ash tree in Wisconsin forests?
It's a major component of our forests, and perhaps even more dramatically, when you're thinking about the emerald ash borer, it's a major component of our urban forests. It's one of the primary street trees, particularly in Milwaukee. I've noticed that, but in many of the cities in Wisconsin, I believe it's estimated that about 20% of the street trees that we find in our cities are ash. And in Milwaukee, I think it actually might be a bit more than that. In our forests, there are a couple of environments in which ash is the predominant species. In the southern part of Wisconsin, you'll see green ash, which is also the main tree that you'll see as the street tree. You'll see green ash in floodplains where it can be the predominant species. And in northern Wisconsin, it would be black ash. And then throughout Wisconsin, our upland forests have a lot of white ash. Aside from being an attractive tree, these are fast-growing trees that come in fairly quickly after a forest has been cleared or if there's been some other kind of disturbance like a windstorm or something like that. They grow tall and straight, so they're pretty attractive trees, and they're a valuable timber tree as well. Ash, as you probably know, is the primary species used for baseball bats. It's also used for axe handles and shovel handles, things like that. And that's because it's a very strong wood, but it's also a flexible wood. So it's very good for those types of applications where you want the wood to be strong, but you don't want it to be totally rigid.
How do I identify an ash tree? I think I missed that section of biology class in college. So.
Well, ash trees are pretty distinctive trees. They have what are known as compound leaves, which is to say that an individual leaf has a stem and then several leaflets that come off of it. And depending on the species, it would have an odd number of leaflets. It would have opposite leaflets, just opposite each other with the classic sort of oval shape with maybe a little bit of a tip on the end. And there would be two on each side and then one at the tip. And there might be 5, 7, 9, 11, 13 leaflets on it.
Okay.
Ash trees are also pretty distinctive in that if you have ash trees in your yard, they're usually about the last ones to green up in the spring, and they're usually the first ones to start changing color in the fall.
We have some callers who want to join us, so let's go to the phones and take a call first from Dennis in Arpen. Dennis, good morning.
Good morning, and good morning to you, Professor Townsend.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes, I can. Can you hear
okay.
me?
Yes. My question is, I've noticed in the travels across the country that the state of Ohio has a program where they basically quarantine the area where they have the infestation. And I'm wondering if you know whether that quarantine is working, because they have fines on the road or highways saying any transporting of ash firewood beyond this point is fines up to $4,000.
I think that the quarantine does work to slow the spread of the emerald ash borer. I think if you've gone to state parks in Wisconsin and actually throughout the Midwest, you'll notice that there are actually pretty strong restrictions on firewood anywhere. And those policies were implemented specifically with the emerald ash borer in mind. So pretty much anywhere, they don't like people to transport firewood because they don't know what the source is. I would say that my suspicion is that the primary movement of emerald ash borer in the early stages was due to firewood transport, possibly transport of ash wood that had been cut, and then nursery stock. The insect still moves on its own. I think humans make it move further, faster by transporting it on firewood. But it's still going to move on its own. So the quarantines will slow it, but not stop it.
Thanks for that call, Dennis. We have a question in an email. You mentioned that ash trees are prominent in urban areas. Is there an easy way to tell if emerald ash borer has invaded your neighborhood? How do we tell an infected tree from one that simply is unhealthy?
Yes, and that's a good question, because there are a lot of other things that affect ash trees, fungi, and other insect pests. There are really three things that you should look for to determine whether your tree is infected. The first is just the presence of an adult insect, and you can go online, you can Google emerald ash borer and see a picture of it. It's a pretty distinct species. But you likely won't actually find the insect. You would have to look at a very particular time after the emergence of the insect to find it. So what you want to do is look for signs of the larvae. And there are the first sign would be what you would call the exit hole. So the insect deposits its larvae within the bark. Once the larvae mature, they exit the bark, and they have these D-shaped exit holes. And it's like a D with the flat side down, so it's sort of a half a semicircle. And that's very typical of what you would see. If you peel back the bark on the tree and you see lots of S-shaped grooves within the bark and within the wood closest to the bark, that's another sign of what you would see with the emerald ash borer. And if you see any of this, and you're not in a place that's currently infected, you should probably get in touch. There's actually a hotline for the DNR in Wisconsin and a number of different resources that you should probably get in touch with if you suspect that you've got it. Another sign, by the way, is if you see a lot of sprouts near the base of the tree, lower down on the tree, so most trees go straight up and they have their foliage high up in the tree, and the tree starts sprouting lower down, that might also be a sign that the tree is infected, because what happens if the tree has been girdled and the nutrients can't get to the upper part of the tree will try to do things so that it can continue to live, and so it'll start growing sprouts below where the insect is actually in the bark as a reaction to what's going on with it. So that's another possible sign.
Let's go next to Ron in Blooming Grove. Ron, good morning.
Thanks for mentioning handles and bats as a major use for ash wood. Some advice, suggestions, plant zero ash trees. That's, I guess, more critical for the urban people than it is for people with actual forest land that are growing trees for harvest. For a few decades, I've been suggesting that on every city block, they should plant at least four different genus, not just species, but different genus of shade trees, so that when some disaster like this or chestnut blight or the Dutch elm disease comes in, it would only kill out 25% of our shade and leave 75% until we can get a different species planted in the dead spots. The bigger advice, I guess, is for everybody that owns some of the 77 million ash trees, I think that's what they say there are in Wisconsin, I believe we should harvest every ash tree that's greater than 12 inches in diameter. Leave the little ones just in case they find a way to stop the ash borer, but harvest all the ones that are saleable, but only in the counties outside the four that are quarantined. Don't waste your time harvesting them in the quarantine area, but find out exactly what the handle makers and the bat makers need. Do they need 36 or 42 or 48 inch long bolts of ash log to make their product? And then carefully harvest your ash trees, cut them into proper lengths, and ship them to the mills that can do that. And after you harvest all the big ash trees out of your forest, manage it so that the oaks, hickories, black walnuts, and other types of trees will fill in where the big ash used to be. If you have other suggestions on how people can cope with managing their forest land, that would be great. Thanks.
We've got about 45 seconds until we have to break for news, so we'll probably get the start of this answer, and then we'll finish it after the newscast. Thanks for that call, Ron.
Yeah, I think he points to one issue, is that if the emerald ash borer is able to spread through all of Wisconsin prior to an effective control and coming up, that something's going to have to happen to all those ash trees, and I think there are a variety of management plans, and after the news, I can talk a little bit more about some of the options.
That's good. We'll look forward to that. Phil Townsend is Associate Professor of Forest Ecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We're talking about the emerald ash borer. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234 or 263-1890. We'll pick things up right after we hear this news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio News. It's 6:35. Good morning. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Well, this is our morning for invasion coverage. This hour, it's the invasion of the emerald ash borer. Next hour, it's the Russian invasion of Georgia. And at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about the barbarian invasions of Europe of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So it's an invasion theme here today. My guest this hour is Phil Townsend, Associate Professor of Forest Ecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he's here to talk about the emerald ash borer. And, Professor, just before the news, you were starting to respond to Ron in Blooming Grove, who was talking about forest management and urging us to harvest all of the mature ash trees we have now before we lose them to the emerald ash borer. So why don't you continue your response to that, and then we'll move on.
Well, there's a couple of things to respond to with Ron's question. The first is he actually brought up the idea of diversity in street trees, and that's actually a really smart idea. And ash becoming such a dominant street tree followed the decline of the Dutch elm, of the elms, due to Dutch elm disease, in which elms were the major street tree. And I think this continues to be an object lesson in trying to have diversity in our urban forest. The idea of preemptive removal of ash is really not an option at this point. Preemptive removal of ash might be something that could be done in urban settings, in urban landscapes, as a management approach, and then is probably only possible if it's done in sort of a tiered fashion, where a certain proportion of the trees are removed each year, say 10% each year for 10 years, and they can be replaced by new trees. And this can reduce ash and reduce the risk of movement in urban areas, but really is not is really not something that can be done in a widespread way outside in the forests of Wisconsin. There are some approaches that can be taken, though, in the forested landscape, so in our state forests and other places. Places that are at very high risk, and areas that are regularly part of working forests that might actually be harvested themselves. In fact, might be a good place to go ahead and log and remove the ash component, sort of in advance of when it might be harvested otherwise. A lot of other areas where you actually find ash in Wisconsin are in fact wetlands. And indeed, sensitive, ecologically sensitive areas, river floodplains, for example, where the removal of ash by logging may, in fact, cause damage to other parts of the ecosystem that you may not want. In addition, it can cause too much logging. Say, if it's large areas of floodplains, might cause erosion and things like that. And the other part to that is that in our upland forests, where white ash is pretty common, it's rarely a dominant species. It rarely occurs in very thick areas of sort of all ash. So it would be very difficult to kind of go out and find all of these trees and remove them. I do think that there will be some preemptive removal of ash trees, and I think that, knowing that the trees are likely going to be infested at some point anyway, that if some merchantable timber can be drawn out of that, that might be an approach. But in other areas, the ecological consequences may not warrant doing that.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. That's the toll-free number you can use to join us. We have some available lines, so if you call now, you have a good chance of getting on the air. And if you're in Madison, please use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. You can send an email as well. The address is talk@wpr.org. And that's exactly what Mark from Romance did. He sent us an email, and here it is. While there is all sorts of talk about not transporting a bundle or two of firewood in your car trunk, there is a much larger risk that is not being addressed. Here in Vernon County, we have dozens of small sawmills busily cutting up whole tree trunks that are being brought in from other counties and even other areas, even other states. I know they cut up ash because I purchased cut ash flooring several years ago. I have no idea if the ash I purchased grew up locally or not. There is simply no way a semi-truck full of whole tree trunks can be adequately inspected at the state border for the tiny emerald ash borer. What steps has the state taken to address this major route of infestation of state forests?
At this point, the state is still in the process of developing its plan. The quarantine areas are fairly limited to the area where the borer has actually been found and positively identified. So there is some movement of wood from areas from non-infested areas to mills in Wisconsin that are also not in the quarantine zones. The state's that are quarantined, in the locations that are quarantined, the wood should not be moved. And I'm not sure the extent to which inspections occur in other states. And insofar as this is a new threat in Wisconsin and it's just been discovered, the DNR and the Department of Agriculture and Commerce are still working to develop the actual plan that will be implemented. It's a very difficult issue, the movement of wood. It can't all be inspected, and to some extent it's going to depend upon people following the rules. In Wisconsin, we do have mills locally in a lot of areas that can handle the wood, and for highly infested trees, the disposal of that wood is a subject of a fair amount of concern and decision making in terms of how the wood can be used. For instance, you wouldn't want to use it as mulch or something like that, but there might be other uses that you can use that are going to be less.
Well, can the wood be treated after it's been cut to eliminate the larvae of the ash borer?
Typically, some wood can actually be treated beforehand, although that becomes expensive if you're doing it on a large number of trees. There are topical sprays that can kill the larvae once they emerge, but the scale of which it would have to happen is pretty enormous, actually, which is why this is such a frightening, well, maybe frightening is too strong of a word, but this is why this is such an issue, is when you start to talk about the woods and the forest where you have a lot of trees, any kind of treatment that you might do can't really be done on a scale that would really stop it. It might just slow it. So, for example, if you have some prized ash trees in your yard that you value, there are chemical treatments that you can use that might help you fight off the emerald ash borer or at least prolong the life of your trees if they're not too infested. But that can't be done on all trees everywhere, certainly not in the woods, and probably not even with street trees, because it's fairly extensive use of different types of insecticides.
We're talking about the invasion of the emerald ash borer into Wisconsin just last week. Now it was discovered in two different places in Wisconsin, and seems to me, just from what the professor is saying and what other news accounts have said, it's a matter of time before it spreads out from those areas as well. This has been a huge problem in Michigan. It was first found in lower Michigan near Detroit. It's now in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan as well. It's in Wisconsin, it's in Ohio, it's in a bunch of other states, and it's killed millions of trees. So we're talking about that, and we have an expert with us who can kind of explain how this thing works and try and offer some suggestions as to what we can do. And we have callers on the line, and we'll get to them right after we check the weather around the state of Wisconsin. And there's still a line available for you if you call right now at 800-642-1234 or 263-1890. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On 647, you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. Next hour, we'll talk about the situation in Georgia with its breakaway area of South Ossetia and what's been happening over there, the Russian invasion, and I guess you could say the Russians marching through Georgia. We'll talk with an expert who says that the two presidential candidates, Barack Obama and John McCain, both have it wrong in their approach to this crisis. So stay tuned for that. That's after 7 o'clock. This hour, it's the emerald ash borer in Wisconsin, and my guest is Phil Townsend, associate professor of forest ecology at UW-Madison. And we have lots of callers on the line, professor, so let's go right back to the phones and take a call from Sean in Burlington. Sean, good morning.
Good morning. I've got some mature ash trees that shade the west side of my house, and I've been contemplating replacing those, not taking them out, but planting replacements for them eventually. But I also put in small ash trees about 9 years ago when we moved here, and those trees are now, you know, 1 to 2, maybe 2.5, 3 inches in diameter. I'm wondering if those trees that small are also susceptible. And I'm also wondering, what happens when this ash borer moves through and takes out all the susceptible trees? Does that remove their habitat? Because I'm assuming the ash trees will regenerate from roots and seeds and whatnot. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. The smaller ash trees are susceptible, particularly when they get older, but they're not as susceptible as the mature trees. The larvae feed on the phloem, and the smaller trees simply have less phloem, and they're less desirable. So those trees are probably fine, but at some point they will become they will be at risk. As far as habitat is concerned, the ash tree will persist, and my feeling, based on having looked at forests with a lot of different invasive pests, is that there are likely going to be places where the emerald ash borer won't make it. Maybe luck. It may just be that they don't end up in a place, and you'll have pockets of mature ash trees that remain. For a while, the trees will persist with regeneration through seedlings and some trees that end up getting left behind. But eventually, through time, it will become a less prominent part of the landscape. So you may end up having small trees of emerald ash borers, but never get very many large trees.
Okay, thanks for that call, Sean. Let's go next to Mike in Bayfield County. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. See, I don't think that the government is serious about dealing with this problem because, I mean, as your guest said earlier, it's going to only slow the process, and eventually they're going to get all the trees unless they're willing to send a bunch of entomologists over there to Asia to spend the money to study the paratoids that are keeping this beetle under control. And, I mean, there's other examples. I mean, it's only recently that the collie moth is a major problem for apples, and it's only recently that they've gotten the money that they're going to spend to study this particular moth in Eastern Europe, where it's a problem. Instead, they've been spending money, growers and stuff, on sprays for the last 50 years or so, which is no answer at all.
There's a little bit of a time scale issue when it comes to studying the parasitoids. There are scientists who are studying the parasitoids in East Asia, but there's a little bit of a, I don't know if it's a defeatist attitude or something like that. The problem is that to get the parasitoids established in our forests may, in fact, take longer than the pest would take to move through the forest and remove it. I'm actually a big supporter of trying to find natural enemies or biological controls for these, but it's as we've seen with the hemlock woolly adelgid in the eastern U.S., where that's one of the major approaches that people are taking, which is trying to find these predators. It's a fight against time when it comes to doing that.
Well, I guess that was what I was going to follow up or ask about is, why not just bring some natural predators back to the United States from Asia?
Well, they would have to breed them, and they would have to get the populations going. So it takes many generations of the insects. And, of course, the generation of an insect is a lot shorter than our generation. But there's the first issue, which is breeding the predators and getting a large enough amount of them so that you could introduce them. And then once you've introduced them, have the predator population grow naturally large enough so that it can actually have an effect. And, of course, the predator population can only grow if it's got the prey. And so you can't really introduce the predator in a place where the borer is not yet present because they won't have a food source. So you would want the two to grow together, and that would take a targeted introduction in the places that you need. And there is some concern, although I think it's less likely, of unintended consequences in terms of introducing predators from other countries. This is already a pest that's come from another country. But I think that a lot of times scientists do want to be careful when they take on these actions that there aren't some sort of unintended consequences of also introducing the predator to the pest.
Well, we've certainly seen that happen before with a variety of things. We think, okay, let's bring in the predator, and then there's nothing to prey on the predator. Let's go to Tony in Madison next. Tony, good morning.
Good morning. I know that this was kind of touched on before, but I travel around the state a lot for work, and I swear every Friday you see a car or a pickup truck with a boat behind it with an Illinois license plate, and they have a pickup truck bed full of firewood, and they're all going north. They're all going to their cabin wherever in the state. And while I guess we appreciate their tax dollars, you can't guarantee that they're not bringing some ash that they cut down in the yard. I mean, I know that we used to live in Chicago several years ago, and having grown up in Wisconsin and living down there, there's a cultural difference there. They just don't seem to care about not spreading that stuff. I mean, the ash borers everywhere down in the south side of Chicago. They're cutting ash trees down left and right. And what can we do about that?
I wish I could say that people were good at distinguishing ash from other trees, and I think that's part of the problem. I think that with a little bit of education in terms of knowing what an ash tree is, you could really reduce that problem. There is the problem is that education, which is the main way to get people to understand what they're doing when they make decisions to bring firewood from quarantine or infested areas, but not all people are open to the education or necessarily receive it in a way that they need to. Enforcement is the other part of it, but as we all know, budgets for state forests and state parks and other places are stretched thin, and the education that, say, a local police officer looking at a pickup truck from Illinois with a load of firewood in the back, it's not necessarily going to be the first thing on their mind to look at the wood and determine whether it's infested or even to think about that.
Well, there's been a pretty significant PR campaign. It's been on television. There are signs up all over the place. It's been on the radio telling people not to bring firewood with them and to buy all their firewood locally to make sure that it's not infested. And, well, apparently this hasn't worked completely.
Yeah. And I think that the cases that the caller was talking about really are cases where it becomes sort of an enforcement issue, and that really depends upon the knowledge and the desire on the part of local law enforcement to try and curtail that.
Well, so far the approach to this invader has been preventative. That is, we've been trying to keep it out of the state. And now that our defenses have been breached and short of killing every ash tree in Wisconsin, what's the next step, in preventing the spread of the emerald ash borer or minimizing its effects?
Well, I think that this is the first warning. DNR, over the next few months, through the end of the year, is going to conduct surveys to see if it's spread or can be found in more locations than the couple locations where it's been found so far. And that then becomes the basis for the decision-making. I think in the short term, if it turns out to be an isolated infestation, which I actually think is probably unlikely, but if it is an isolated infestation, removal of the trees is the approach to take. Following that, if it's a more widespread infestation, it's going to have to be a combination of targeted removal and sort of landowner education to sort of determine to give people their options. For large woodlots, it might just be logging or even just letting the trees die if it's really widespread. For urban areas, it's going to take working with urban areas, with urban foresters to identify whether some sort of phased removal program is in line.
If I suspect I have this on my property, who should I call?
The DNR has a hotline, actually, and I have that number here for you. It's 1-800-462-2803. That's probably your best bet at this point, which would be to call the Wisconsin DNR Emerald Ash Borer hotline. And you can also go to the DNR webpage, and they have a lot of information about people to contact. And another actual good source of information is the webpage of the entomology department at the University of Wisconsin. They've got a fact sheet, and in addition, they have some. There's a link to a page that describes some of the insecticide approaches that an individual landowner might want to take into consideration if there's a few trees to save.
Thank you very much, Professor Townsend, for an educational hour.
Thank you.
Phil Townsend is Associate Professor of Forest Ecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Cynthia Schuster produced this program. Michelle Kofel handled the phones. And if you want to hear it again, if you missed part of it, you can go to our website, WPR.org, and listen to the whole thing over again. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.